the big questions that we're holding are around what the place of arts might be in creating personal and political shifts in conflict narratives, in conflict transformations that moves towards equity and justice for everyone.
This is Civios, your source for public affairs research. A podcast from the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota.
In this episode, we will be exploring how the arts are a medium for social change. We will be talking with Sonia Arsham-Kutinets, a professor of theater at the University of Minnesota. She has developed and documented collaborative theater projects in conflict regions, which she discusses in her book, Theater, Facilitation, and Nation Formation in the Balkans and Middle East. Avigail Mannenberg is a Minneapolis-based artist who grew up in Israel. She's been teaching painting and drawing as an adjunct professor at the Department of Art at the University of Minnesota, as well as the Minneapolis College of Art and Design. Her most recent body of work is paintings in direct response to the chaos experienced by those fleeing conflict. Their current collaboration is called A Contested Home: Artistic Approaches to Commemoration in the Galilee. Thank you both so much for coming to speak with us about your very important and timely work. Sonia, let me start by asking you to talk about the focus of your project.
Well, in this project, we look at how the arts intersect with commemoration, particularly the idea of contested home in the Galilee. How might visual and embodied art enable the acknowledgement of multiple narratives of home with focused attention on the rights of the dispossessed?
Avigail, can you talk a little bit about your own personal motivation?
I'm interested in the path one has to take in order to feel at home. How much does it have to do with one's family history? I'm a visual artist, born and raised in Yad. And Yad is a small village, tight community of second-generation Holocaust survivors, many of who maintain the Jewish-Israeli taboo against recognizing the reality of Palestinian dispossession. Yad was built on the ruins of Me'ar. Me'ar is a town was a town that was inhabited by Palestinians who had been dispossessed in the war of 1948. And in this project, I'm looking back at myself, my family, my community, as someone who left, and I'm challenging the values and historical assumptions of my upbringing.
Well, I have much less direct connection as Avigail has, but my relationship is connected through a long-term focus on theater as a medium of conflict transformation. A lot of my early work was in the Balkans, which is where my family is from, and I did a lot of work with theater with youth in the Balkans during and immediately after the 1990s conflict. And through that, I ended up working at an organization called Seeds of Peace, which is a camp for Israeli, Palestinian, and Arab youth located in Maine. And it's where I ended up meeting my husband almost 20 years ago. And we go back every year and with our son, who's six. So that encounter is really personal for me. But my focus in this project is less direct, although at the same time it's connected with my scholarly work, looking at different modes of theater making that connect with long-term conflict transformation in the region.
Can you spend a couple of minutes talking about the political context of this project?
So one of the most important things to understand in this project is that we are looking at this conflict within the current borders of Israel. We are looking at the Jewish and Arab residents of the state of Israel. Both groups have attachments to land, and both groups have obligations to memory. The Jewish group, some of them have obligations to their memory of their ancestors from that were escaping from the Holocaust and were hoping to escape to a place and be able to call it home. And for the Palestinians, this possession, they have an obligation for their families that were dispossessed into areas of Lebanon and Jordan.
Sonia, why do you feel this research project is important at this time?
I would say that there are three main reasons. The first is political, that this is a conflict that has been ongoing, and the control of the narrative of possession and dispossession and what legitimates that possession has political stakes. And this kind of conflict indexes conflicts over the narrative of what constitutes home, not only in the region that includes Israel and Palestine, but includes our own space. Our space that we reside here in Minneapolis has conflicting narratives around the possession of space and home. This is a settled area. It's also Dakota homeland. And you can see in something like the recent tussle over the naming of the return of the lake named to Badeh Makaska creates a conflict in even a minor way, but it has something to do with the deep emotional attachments people have to being able to control the narrative of place and of home. So that's one kind of realm. And I would say that even as a citizen of the United States, I still have an ethical responsibility for what happens in regions in which the U.S. has put economic and political resources in trying to shape. The second kind of frame of why this is important, I think, is artistic. And the big questions that we're holding are around what the place of arts might be in creating personal and political shifts in conflict narratives, in conflict transformations that moves towards equity and justice for everyone. And finally, this particular project, I would say, focuses on the intimate and the local as a way to transform conflict energies. And we believe that artistic processes can break fixed agendas and move people to action and personal transformation. The arts have a way of accessing the sensory and the emotional, a kind of way that detours the what might be fixed into the grooves of like a record of memory and how one is supposed to fit into memory. And the arts can bypass that kind of fixed groove of what the narrative is and what possession means. So we refer to these moments that art can produce in both the individual and the community and the larger society as moments of intimate shift.
Well, to that point, Abigail, can you share some examples of what you refer to as moments of intimate shifts?
Yeah, it was quite revealing, and we were able to really see a shift in state of mind. So, for example, we had a workshop for a group of Jewish artists from Yad. This was a diverse group from very young people in their 20s to older people in their 60s and even 70s. And all of the participants of that workshop had strong connection to Yad, to the village. And through that workshop, where we encountered many artistic activities, we were able to really see those moments of intimate shifts, those transitions in state of mind. And for example, after one of the participants, he was actually one of the elder ones, the ones that really helping to put Yad, the Jewish village, to build it in the 70s. So he was sharing with us that after encountering the contested hill, the contested place for so many years, for the first time during the workshop, and after encountering a testimony by a Palestinian older woman, he was walking on those paths that he was walking on for years. But for the first time, he had a different feeling. He was feeling the pain of the other for the first time. And he said, I feel the conflict in a totally different way now. So that was really moving for him and for us as a group to hear that and experience that with him, that shift. And I could share another example. One of the younger participants. He's in his 20s, and he was sharing a memory from his childhood when he was walking with his father and brother on that hill, the contested hill, and they were collecting stones, rocks, to put in their terrace in their yard. But then during the workshop, after hearing the testimonials, he realized that these rocks or these stones are not just stones or rocks. There are other people that feel very close to those rocks because they are the ruins of their homes. And he was quite struck by that. And that was a moment of shift for him.
Thank you so much for sharing that. What about beyond the individual? How has there been an impact beyond the individual, something within the community more public than the individual?
Yeah, so few months after the workshop, each participant, Jewish participant, came up with an artistic piece of work or an idea that they wanted to do something, some action or some activity that they wanted to do in relation to their idea of what is home and how they encounter that contested hill. And we had a 3-day event planned for the larger community to share our workshop and artistic creations. And that was very powerful for the community, both in a negative way and in a positive way. It was a time and a space for people to reflect and share their thoughts, opinions, and feelings about this topic. For example, one thing that came out of those events, the community now in Yad formed a committee to think and develop and plan a commemoration sculpture or garden or something for the dead of the war, for example. Another more, let's say, social encounter, the small group from the Jewish community initiated a meeting with a home of one of the Palestinians that gave testimony in their home, and that was very moving.
So, Abigail, you took on a number of roles as project initiator, curator, and artist. Can you talk briefly about each of these roles within this project?
Yeah, that's true. I was holding many hats in this project, and sometimes it feels very blurry and they all tangled together. I guess in initiating this project, I really wanted to understand my relation to home and to my community or to a community from an outsider and an insider perspective. I left Yad and I moved to the States, and now I live in Minnesota for the past 10 years. So it shifts my perspective. As a curator, encountering the Yad's community participants' work and thinking about how to deliver their ideas to the larger community was fascinating to me. And then encountering all the other opinions and thinking about how to discuss that in a calm and productive environment, that was really interesting and presented to be very successful. And of course, as an artist, I was always thinking, and I'm always thinking about my own desire to understand my own identity. I was there as a daughter. My parents live in that community. My friends, my childhood friends, live there. So I was a daughter, I was a friend to some people. I discovered throughout this process that I'm also a deserter, someone that they see as someone that betrayed them. So I could also call myself a political activist and artist. I cannot ignore all those contexts, and that definitely informs my work. A piece that I was doing there was actually inspired by Marina Abramovic's work, where I placed two chairs in the middle of the community center during the time of the exhibition. And I invited the members of the community, the Jewish community, and the Palestinian guests to come and sit and communicate with me in silence about taboos, about things that we do not discuss or that are hard to talk about. But obviously, by sitting there and holding all those hats, all those themes and issues were very present, and that was very powerful to me.
Sonia, as you were developing the project, what were some of the challenges you encountered?
So many. So the political context was one of those challenges, and a lot of things shifted with the different politics of this administration. It didn't shift radically, but there was a move to put the capital of, or the U.S. was recognizing that the capital of Israel was in Jerusalem. That was a big political move. President Trump's embrace of Netanyahu, we don't know what's going to be happening. Like, things are kind of up in the air right now in the Israeli elections, but that embrace certainly figured the conflict in a particular way in terms of where the U.S. was positioning itself. There's ongoing conflict in Gaza. People on both sides are really continuing to be hurt quite physically, and that impacts this possibility that people can see about doing something artistic and intimate and local that can seem bizarre in the context of a feeling of real deep existential fear. So that's always there. That context is always there. The timeline of the project was also a challenge because neither of us live in the area, and there's only so much you can do at a distance, and there's only so much you can do when you're able to be present in that space for a limited period of time. So one thing we had to do early on was to develop partners, and to develop partners that live in the area takes time. Adrienne Marie Brown speaks about the idea of you have to move at the speed of trust in any project. So whatever structure we had set out in a grant proposal had to live alongside the reality of the need to develop trust on the ground. We did eventually find partners in the region, but because of the kind of trust building that was needed and because of the reality that there are also very different agendas, there are differences within Yad about how much people want to confront the taboo of the past. And for many Palestinians, their interest is not just in reconciling with narratives, but they actually want material change, repossession of their rights to the land recognized, if not the land restored. And that's incredibly difficult. What we ultimately decided working with a Palestinian partner and our Jewish-Israeli partner in the village is that trying to do anything with the two communities is too soon, that there needed to be work done individually with each group, who had very different kinds of goals, to see whether there was a point at which they could come together, and that the immediate work was going to be most useful and important to do, especially with Avigal's relationship to Yad, with the Jewish residents of Yad, and then to have them encounter the Palestinian testimonials to start to forge relationships and to initiate a process of trust building by showing that they were willing to confront this taboo narrative, and that that would eventually, hopefully, lead to a phase two of the project.
Sonia, in your personal opinion, what are some of the most important takeaways from this project?
Well, I think I referenced some of those when talking about the challenges, but I would say it was a reinforcement of something that I kind of knew but had to be reminded of, that if you're working through this idea of intimate moments and intimate shifts, that requires time, and that the battle over memory is going to keep being fought, so that you need to have a kind of artistry that enables the expansion of who you might include in the framework of commemoration. Is it possible to remember beyond the community that you identify most closely with yourself? Another thing I would add is that the method works, even if it's small scale and local and intimate, that those kinds of shifts can happen. And once they've happened, they don't go away. You might find yourself, if you've experienced that shift, in a moment of dissonance with any kind of narrative that seems more narrow. and doesn't include the truth of the other.
Abigail, what are the next steps for this project?
Yeah, so I would really strengthen Sonia's last words here about seeing the shift and that people could learn to see things differently. And we saw that our model works. People had shifts in minds and in approaches. And thinking about that, we would really like to continue. And obviously, first obstacle would be funding. We would need to find funding in order to continue. We would like, there's an idea and a thought maybe to expand and take that model into other contested spaces in the region, which there are many. We would like to then start working as the Jewish group has been working on their own agendas, thoughts, and path. We would like to provide or support the same path for a Palestinian group. So developing that would be something that, with Palestinian partners, that's something that I would be very interested in. And then bringing both groups together and working more with theater, that would be something that we would like to do.
Thanks, Abigail. Sonia, is there anything that you'd like to add to what Abigail was talking about just now?
Yes, and it's one of the harder struggles in this kind of project, and it's something that my colleague Chen mentioned when we were first developing the project, that there's a lot of resistance in the area around projects that feel just like collaborations that sustain the status quo of inequity. And the phrase that he used really stuck with us, that ultimately you're looking for co-resistance and not coexistence. And that shift towards co-resistance, meaning we're all resisting a narrative that sustains separation and sustains inequity. To get to that place where two groups of people are capable of holding each other's truths and of working together towards the liberation of everyone, to feel that no one group is getting something more than the other, that possession is a game of winner takes all. If we can move beyond that kind of narrative to one that enables everyone to resist that idea that your humanity is tied up in the defeat of the other, then that's the kind of goal that we're striving for in this project ultimately.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Civios, an initiative of the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. To learn more about this segment, please visit civios.umn.edu.